You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Oh yeah, hello, hello. It's Brooke Devard. You're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. I have Grace Gibson here with me.
Hi, beautiful people.
Grace, I'm sure you've done a million interviews. Have you ever done a podcast?
I actually have not done a podcast.
I'm happy to be your first. I'm trying to think of like how to introduce you because you are an actress, a dancer, a singer, like just an overall entertainer. And also a businesswoman.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Hopefully not a jack of all trades, but an expert in many things.
Yes.
One day.
Your latest endeavor, the All Eyes on Me movie, is out now.
Mm-hmm.
And you played a young Faith Evans.
Yes.
For the role. Was that like your first really big feature film, or had you done...
Well, actually, my first film was a Fox Searchlight film called Black Nativity.
Okay. Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
And so that was pretty big as well. It was very daunting at the time. My scene partner was Forrest Whitaker. So to have your first time on set where the eyes are on you, no pun intended or intended, I don't know, and have it be with Forrest Whitaker, it was definitely exciting and at the same time nerve-wracking. And I told him that, and he said, it's okay, you got it.
Aww.
And he was really kept me on my toes as an actor. So that was great training.
Yeah.
But this was my first film that I think was such a big part of pop culture.
Yes.
So it's gotten quite a bit of attention, which is exciting.
Yes. So for people that don't know, if you've been like living under a rock, it's a story of Tupac. And did you get to meet Faith Evans when you were...
Unfortunately, I did not.
Okay.
I sent her a message on Instagram. I wanted to come to her really with just full of, you know, humility and my love for her as an artist.
Yeah.
Because I grew up listening to her and really being influenced by her melodies and her vocal tone. So I really came to her with that information and telling her that I really loved her and I wanted to honor her with whatever script I was given.
Right.
I was gonna, my first intention was to honor this amazing woman who had given her life to pop culture and music.
Yes. That's amazing. And so I saw the transformation of like you getting into hair and makeup and becoming Faith, and like you look just like her. When you have like your own personal style, obviously, and I think you have a very distinct personal style.
Thank you.
When you are, you know, on a movie and you have to play someone else and get totally transformed in terms of your look, is that something that you enjoy? Does it help you get into character?
I really do enjoy it. Acting was never something that I planned on really happening.
Really? Even like seeing your mom do movies your whole life?
Yeah, no intention. She's so amazing, and my father was such an amazing director that I was actually quite intimidated by acting. I took it very seriously, and I saw everything that was put into it, so I had no intention of making this my career. And it was actually Casey Lemons who, she saw me sing at Samuel Jackson's house when I was 10 years old.
Okay.
And she said, I know that I want to write a role for you.
Wow.
And she wrote this role in Black Nativity for me.
That's amazing.
And she really vouched for me. And she told me, Grace, you have this mystery about you that I think that needs to be captured on screen. And you're doing an injustice to yourself to not be an actor. So I said, well, shit, that sounds pretty good. Let me let me try and get it together. But right. My mom has been a huge mentor to me, and my godmother, Caroline Ducro, they've been big acting coaches. I've also studied with Richard Lawson. And I really enjoy, being a chameleon. That's what I like about acting.
And we just like jumped right in. Like, could you give some background on like your parents and even like early memory? I mean, I'm sure you have very early memories of being around sets and the awards and all of that.
So my parents met when my mother was auditioning for the role of Josephine Baker.
Okay.
At the time, it was the first film that HBO had ever done.
Wow.
And it was...
We should say who your mom is, Lynn Whitfield.
Yes, Lynn Whitfield.
And it's so funny because the icon for this podcast is Josephine Baker. I have, like, loved Josephine Baker in my entire life. She's, like, my ultimate muse, so... That's also a movie that I'm obsessed with.
Well, that's another way that we're connected, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Because not only are we Leos, but Josephine Baker is a huge influence. And for me, she's the reason I'm alive. So I really, she's like my fairy godmother. I only have one godmother, Caroline Ducro, but she's my fairy godmother in heaven. And yeah, they met on set. When she was auditioning, she went through a really grueling auditioning process. We actually were just in New York archiving all this footage from that time, her audition tapes.
Oh, wow. What was it like for you to see your mom's audition tapes?
It was really amazing.
Yeah.
It was really inspiring. Mm-hmm. Michael Peters was her best friend before, you know, he passed away. He was Michael Jackson's choreographer. And
oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was his main choreographer who really helped him carve out his unique style. Mm. If you see the music video Bad.
Yes,
he's the one in, I think it's Bad. He's the one in the white who's kind of like, with the knife and stuff.
Yes,
that's Michael Peters. And he was my mom's best friend and he choreographed it for her.
Wow.
Because he also wanted to choreograph the movie. George Faison ended up doing it. He was like an uncle to me. But so to see her have the faith to go put her money behind this thing and direct it herself and find the essence of Josephine Baker inside of her was so inspiring, because I think that now we're so distracted by, does someone look just like someone, or do they sound just like
that?
And that's so important, but true actors can be anyone.
Yep.
And my mom really, really, it was a personification of her work, and she was not a spring chicken. She was 38.
Oh, was she? She looks so young.
And I don't mean to put her age out there. I know. I mean, sorry, everyone. But you guys did it already. Thanks a lot, Google. She's pissed off about that. But just to put in perspective how much faith that took.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and having the boobs out was just, wow. Just a lot of courage, Mom. Thank you.
I know. Would you ever do like a nude role?
I've already been asked to do one.
And how did you respond?
I was offered a role in this film, and it was great money. But I talked to the director. The role kept changing. At first, it was just nudity. Then it was a violent sex scene. And I talked to the director and I said, what would you tell your daughter, sir? And he said, I would tell her not to do it. So I said, I think you've given me my answer then. I can't do it.
Mm.
But I got to visit them on set and he was so cool. But I just realized if my services aren't needed to tell this character's dialogue.
Right.
And if this character isn't even really given dialogue.
Right. It's just about how you look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or really developing the male character who would be taking me violently. You know, I didn't feel like my services were needed. I felt like they could use someone else.
Yes. Yes. No, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Being a young, beautiful woman in Hollywood, where you're going on auditions all the time, do you ever feel like, I don't know, people are trying to like take advantage of you, or
That's an interesting question. In what sense?
You are talented, but you're also like very beautiful, so someone who asks you to do like a violent sex scene, do you feel like it's more about the way that you look and like how beautiful your body is versus like your actual talent?
Well, for me, the director was really honest.
Okay, yes, it seems like it.
Yeah, and that was really important.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of directors sometimes might not be, or producers, or casting directors, or whatever. But I think that what I've realized in, you know, my short career thus far is that I can't blame on anyone else if they're writing the story they want to write.
Right, okay.
They took the initiative to do it.
So totally.
I want to tell stories that pertain to me and women like me, and to see myself on screen in my story, I have to do it. Because how can a man, you know,
yes.
a Caucasian man who's never been in my shoes, how can he really know
your story,
my story, my inner dialogue?
Right.
He can't. So what I've realized is that I have to create an infrastructure around myself to tell narratives that I think are important and could be popular even.
Yeah. I mean, I look at women like Lena Dunham and what she's done with Girls, even though it's highly criticized. She created a role for, no one would have ever written that role for her. You know, she had to kind of like create it for herself. So I think that is like empowering, and I think it's changing in the industry.
Yeah.
How much do you, so, okay, I would imagine you go to an audition, and I experienced a little bit of this when I was at Ford doing modeling. Mm-hmm. You must see the same girls a lot, and you must be a, up against the same women a lot for the same roles, right? Do you feel like there is like an implicit competition that comes with like wanting to make it or wanting to get cast in certain roles?
Well, most of my experience has been, because I was living in New Orleans, has been through taping my auditions.
Okay.
So that was a really great training for me as a director.
Awesome. Yeah, because you got to kind of like set it up. And
exactly. I haven't been in the room as much. That's still new to me. Still getting my footing in LA. But I find that healthy competition, there are certain women that were put out, we're the same type, you know? There's beautiful women like Logan Browning and Journey Smollett, and just, there are so many beautiful black women out there who are going and doing great work. And I don't find it to be an unhealthy competition. I find it to be, wow, I see them doing wonderful, inspiring things. Underground.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Dear White People.
I loved that.
And I'm really inspired to do more, especially now. It's a really special moment in the entertainment industry where we have enough autonomy that we can kind of tell our own dialogues, and there can be enough for everyone to eat and be happy.
Yeah.
So, of course, sometimes you get lost in the Instagramming of it all and the social media competition and seeing, oh, this person's doing this glamorous thing and I'm over here just trudging along trying to get by. But
does your management ever tell you to do certain things on social media, or are you just kind of able to do what you want?
I actually recently let go of my management.
Oh, really? So you're just out here on your own?
Yeah, I'm kind of out here on my own. I'm talking to this new agency. We're going to start doing some things. But I realized that my management, they had too many things on their table to
give you the full attention that you deserve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I also realized that it's really important for us to kind of keep it moving.
Yes.
You know, I gave a year.
Yes.
And it didn't do anything for me, really.
Right.
So I had to keep moving. And I think so many of us, we just cry over spilt milk. So I had to just say, it's better to leave and have the confidence to do that than to just
stay in something that you're not 100% feeling.
Exactly. And then also to learn lessons from their mistakes and figure out how can, you know, how can I do better when I'm in a position and I have talent on my hands or other people's time on my hands? How do I do better? You know, I just take everything as a learning experience. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool. But right now I'm managing myself, which is very interesting.
And so like when you go to do like a red carpet event, for instance, do you have like a stylist and hair and makeup person, or you just kind of like get ready on your own?
When I really first started, which I'm still first starting, but my first film was 3 years ago, I was in this mode of being correct. And this is the right way you do things. This is the right way you tape an audition tape. This is the right way, or trying to search for the right way. I didn't quite know.
Yeah.
So I was always searching for how did they want it to be?
Yes.
But then when I started switching that to how do I do my best? Breaking rules, trying new things.
Yeah.
That's when I found my authentic voice in different sectors of the arts.
Yeah.
You know? Even on audition taping, just that as an art. It's really cool when you get and say, hey, I don't want to just do this on a blank wall. That might not, maybe that's the correct thing to do, but I'm going to go do this where the scene is. I'm going to go find the location. Let's go do this where the scene is. For stuff like that, I got called in to test.
Right. Because imagine they're looking at 20 people that are all doing it the exact same way. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, Grace Gibson, this woman's doing a totally different take. It kind of catches their attention. Yeah.
And I won't lie, I was a little nervous because I didn't want the director to have the impression that I was trying to direct their film. You know, this isn't a directing audition. It's a fine line.
Yes, yes.
But it made me be a better actor. So that was ultimately the focus.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But I think that, there was a time where I felt, oh, you have to have a stylist, you have to have makeup, you have to have everything, be professional and be perfect. And I did that. And then I looked at photos of myself.
And you were like, who is this person?
Which are still on the internet, by the way. Can they leave? Thank you.
Yeah.
And I said, this isn't who I am.
This isn't who you are. Right. Because I think that you do have, like, again, such a personal, distinct sense of style that's, mm-hmm. like, part of your brand. And then also you're a musician as well, mm-hmm. right? So you have, like, an image of your own. And a lot of actresses are just blank palettes that just get transformed into something else.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about music and your kind of career as a performance artist.
So my first love.
Yes.
My first love, music. Music has really brought everything good into my life. Every film I've gotten has been a music film. It's because of music that I got it. My education has been based on music, my friends, my circle. Yeah. So music is really my archangel and sometimes, you know, a little devil on my shoulder pissing me off. But I really love music and mm-hmm. that's my first motivation for sure.
So you mentioned school a little bit. We should go all the way back to the Spence School for Girls on the mm-hmm. Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Oh, yes.
Where we first met.
Bring it back.
And of course, this is a beauty podcast, so I have to connect it to beauty. Mm-hmm. How did going to an all-girls school and also an all predominantly white all-girls school kind of inform your sense of self and affect your relationship with your self-image?
Great question. Thank you, Brooke. Sounds like you have some first-hand experience.
I do.
I think that it affected my perception of myself in a myriad of ways and in layers.
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger, when I was at that school, I really felt like, again, it's that question of correctness and being perfect. I realize I don't have time to be perfect. I don't, yeah. You know? And I wanted to have my hair
straight. Yeah.
I wanted to have my hair straight. And there was a question when I was really young, why do you have so many braids in your hair? Why are so many?
Oh,
so I stopped asking my nanny. I used to say, can you just put like 9 braids in? And I would be so excited to have all these beautiful barrettes and stuff. And I started getting embarrassed of the culture of my hair.
Mm.
You know? And so that was an experience I really went through, you know, texturizing my hair, getting it to be less curly, making sure that for all the bat mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs, it was flat irons.
Oh, God.
Really also the questions of, oh, where'd you get that? Where'd you get your nails? It was very much so correctness. And I think that's where a lot of that came from, a permission to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then as time went on, I always had a sense of self. I always had a sense of style. And even in maybe the social construct rules that we kind of lived in that environment, I would find my own ways to express myself. It was always cool going to Spence, actually, because you had a uniform, right?
Yes. So which I actually liked. I liked having a uniform because it was like, I don't have to wake up and think about what I'm going to wear.
Exactly. I still kind of live that life.
Yeah.
You know? This is my uniform. And you had few choices to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very defining to personal style mm-hmm. and going into the future of now everyone kind of dresses the same.
Right.
There's a lot of styles that breed off of each other and authenticity at large is in question.
Yeah, it's true. Very few people are their authentic selves.
Exactly.
We talked about Solange earlier, who I found out you like were hanging out with in New Orleans.
Yeah, but I love her.
I think she's so amazing because like you just feel like she's being who she is meant to be
mm-hmm.
and that sense of personal style mm-hmm. comes across in everything she does.
Embracing your femininity,
mm-hmm.
embracing your God-given beauty.
Yes.
And embracing your personal style is really, a lot of people say that beauty is kind of not a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
I was a philosophy student in the first class.
Wait, is this at Berkeley or?
Yeah, Berkeley.
Okay. Berkeley School of Music.
Yeah, Berkeley School of Music.
The best school for music in the world.
Yes, y'all hear that, Berkeley? but when I was there, I studied the philosophy of aesthetics. And one of the first things you talk about is the definition of beauty and what that means. And I just think that, and they talk about how much of a necessity it is.
Yes.
Because it keeps us through the trudge of the mundane daily life.
Exactly.
So to see someone, you see someone just looking like a beautiful, like, peacock of clothing, it keeps you smiling, it keeps you inspired, and it keeps you remembering that every moment is important.
Absolutely. Style is like a reason to get up out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's so important. And I think that a lot of times beauty isn't given the respect it deserves. It's like reduced down to, you know, 5 shades of lipstick for the summer. And it's like, it's so much more than that. Mm-hmm. And the way that you choose to present yourself as a woman speaks volumes to your personal history, how you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so much deeper.
And I do have to say that because I am in a predominantly male industry, as a musician, I'm a band leader. And
So you're the boss. So because I don't, admittedly, I don't know that much about what it means to be a band leader, but that means that you bring together the people doing the instruments and the...
That means, I choose the band. A lot of people now, they have musical directors.
Okay.
So you go to tours and... they may or may not have written the songs, and then they'll hire someone who hires the band based on your specifications, and then they teach the band your music.
Got it.
And then you come in later.
Got it.
And then you then begin to do your job. But someone basically teaches the band everything, and when you come in with a musical director, they're ready.
Yes, okay.
All you have to do is sing.
Okay.
And give your corrections.
But you don't have a musical director.
You are
the band leader.
Precisely.
Okay.
And that's been a huge challenge for me, but I wanted to do that because my tutti, my ensemble, my musicians are as important to me as my voice. I'm an arranger. I write a lot of stuff on guitar, and then I'll figure out this is what I want the drum sound to be. This is what I want the organ. This is the bass. And I'll program it on the computer and then teach it to a group of musicians. And I find that through that journey, I've grown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the band doesn't sound like any band. They sound like my band.
Right, because you've trained them.
Exactly. And if one day I want to be a musical director, I can be for other people.
Right, because you've learned how to do it.
Exactly. So it's been really a learning process. And my musicians have, you know, taught me a lot. And they've been so patient with me. And I've played with a lot of different people. Sometimes they'll have to learn 15 songs in 2 hours.
Wow.
And then we have to go do a 6-hour set in New Orleans or whatever.
Oh, my God.
So it's been a great training ground for that. And I don't think most people don't get the honor or the pleasure or the chance to do that before they have to go really show themselves to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been cool doing that in New Orleans in small bars for drunk people. No one remembers anything. And then just to see that grow on such a fast level in New Orleans itself. I mean, our first gig, we got $27 a pop.
Yeah.
And my bass player was like, I can retire off of it. You know? And then 6 months later, we're at Essence Festival.
Yeah.
You know, and we're opening for Big Frida, or I'm singing on the same stage that Oprah then came on 2 hours later.
Huge.
So it just shows you how much really truly being as involved as you can be as a woman in your passions can benefit you.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's funny because I've been thinking about this, just struggling to do the podcast on my own and learning how to edit and learning how to get my own like equipment and the right mics and all of that stuff. It's like, I could very easily just like go to a studio and have someone send me the track and say like where I want it edited. And a lot of people that have podcasts do that, but it was really important to me to figure out like, okay, how do you master your craft? It's not going to be good from the beginning, but how do you like set aside the time and like have the will to like learn how to do it yourself? So
exactly. Yeah. And it, for me, it all really began, I think, when I was 18 years old. And at the time, I was friends with someone who said, you know, I really wanted to sing, and I had gone to France for a year. I taught myself how to play guitar, had a host family, they had a guitar. They were like, where did our guitar go? It was in my room. I was teaching myself for like 3 months.
Yeah.
So finally, my host brother walked in and caught me. And he told me, this friend of mine, he said, you know that if you want to make money in music, you have to write your own songs. And I said, hey, what? I'm just trying to sing.
Right.
I never thought that at that age, in my teen years, or, you know, we talked about Spence at that time, the confidence I had, I didn't think that I could create something. I thought that I could just bring something to the next level.
Right.
But I began to write songs about what I was going through. And then I started to meet with producers. They would flake on me sometimes. And my mom was just pissed. Like, she was like, fuck this. Like, come over. I have something for you. And for Christmas, she got me a whole production kit.
Oh, that's amazing.
She went
amazing.
To Sam Ash, and she got me everything. She talked to people. And I began to slowly teach myself, and also with the help of some of my friends from Berkeley, how to produce.
That's great.
And that was the beginning for me of seeing how gratifying it is.
Yes, to, it's so satisfying.
Yeah, to just finish something from beginning to end and then hand it off with the confidence that you've put your stamp on it.
Yes.
And now you want to see what else someone else can do with it.
Yes, no. Yeah.
Totally. So it's really my mom who taught me that.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your amazing hair for just a moment. Okay. Well,
thank you.
So it makes me really sad to think that there was a time that you didn't like fully love your curly hair, because your hair is absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
Do people try to touch your hair? And if that happens, does it really annoy you?
People have tried to do that. I was actually in a doctor's appointment. One of the nurses was like, I saw her going for the
white
reach.
Woman.
Yes,
of course.
And I just said, I just had to politely tell her, no, you can't.
You
do
can't
that.
Touch my hair.
And she understood.
Yeah.
It was actually a great experience to just say no to
right.
someone
right.
and yeah. have them respect it.
Right.
I've had people go too fast for me to respond.
You're just like,
I was like literally walking once, and this man, a black man, just raked through my hair. Like, he knew better than that. I was walking and I was like, ah!
Wow. Bold.
Yeah, very bold, sir. I don't know what you were attempting to do. It didn't work.
Oh my God. So what, tell me about your hair care process, because I know it's a process.
It is. I like to say that part of my daily style is like pajama chic.
Pajama chic. I love
yes,
that.
Pajama okay. chic. So my hair is the same.
Okay.
I got it cut over a period of time. Well, I went natural.
Yep. Were you not always natural? Did you ever have like a relaxer? Or?
Yeah, I had texturizers for a okay. long time. All through the Spence years. All through from 7 until 22.
Oh, wow.
Or 3. My hair, I was getting texturizers several times a year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So your curls never like reached their full glory.
I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
I was really scared, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I just said, you know what? When you're in college, it's great because you don't even want to spend that extra money on getting
right.
a texturizer.
Right.
So I said, I'll just try it out. I really started when we were filming Black Nativity to grow my hair out.
Mm-hmm.
And it took about 3 years to grow okay. all the way out and then
yeah.
trim it slowly
yep.
and find the shape. Mm-hmm. So I went to a myriad of hairdressers in
okay.
Boston and
yeah.
in New Orleans.
You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Lynn, Christine, I love you. And or Kristen, too. And, and Atlanta was the last place I went to.
Yeah, they know how to do some hair in Atlanta.
Yeah, Al yeah. at Glamour something. I'll message it to you. I don't remember
okay.
the name. But my mom found him, and he has hair very similar to mine.
Okay.
He's multiracial.
Yep.
And I asked for a glorified mullet. That's what I want. You know, where it's short in the front.
Yes, yes.
And then it, like, gets longer
yeah.
with layers. It's
yeah.
not really in its full luster right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, but it's, like, very rock and roll.
Thank
I
you.
I feel like it suits your person. And also, like, the Leo lion vibe. It's just, like, it's
I'm like a man name. Lion.
Yeah.
Thank
totally.
You.
Totally.
It's such an honor to be compared to a lion, honestly. But, yeah, so it took a period of time to get the shape. The shape was the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because even when I would use the right product, it
right.
would be this triangle.
Right. Yes. Yes. And I think a lot of women that go natural don't think about the shape. So,
yeah.
like, when I first went natural, I was like, eh. And then I got a tapered cut, and, like, the whole game changed. Because I was
yeah.
like, oh, this is how I want my hair to look once it's washed and whatever. Okay.
I find that layers work really well for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I got that, and then what I tend to use is I'm very much minimalistic. I don't
okay.
like to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Minimal makeup, whatever I can do the least of when it comes
yeah.
to the appearance but still feel like myself.
Sure.
That's the goal.
So how often do you wash and condition your hair?
I condition it multiple times a week, probably 2 times a week. Wash it once a week.
Okay.
And I use Rin when I'm really on my stuff, which I'm not right now. Right now I'm using Tresemme Botanical, which is
good. That's good.
Yeah,
I like that.
It's really good. And they give you the big bottle, and I need a ton of conditioner.
I know. That's like the story of my life. Everywhere in my house, I have so much shampoo and like no conditioner.
Yeah.
Because I like never use shampoo, and I use so much conditioner.
Me too. I just need like a dab of shampoo and a bottle of conditioner.
Exactly.
They should really make those. Hello, beauty companies.
I know.
You should change the ratios for us.
Exactly.
So I use, when I'm really on it, I like to use Rin Pure, Brazilian.
R-E-N.
Yeah.
That like all natural beauty line. Yes, yeah,
it's
I love
family
them.
Owned. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they use a lot of different things in it, but it seems to be pretty wholesome.
Yep.
So I use that, or I'll use the argan oil one.
Okay.
And, but I really like the Brazilian one because it kind of like coats your hair and makes it a little smoother.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll alternate between those, and then I like to use Talia Wahid.
Oh yes, I know that line.
Yeah, the curl sealer.
The curl sealer. Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh, I've heard about this line like so much recently, and I really want to try it. So you use the curl sealer, and you do
curl
that
sealer
after you rinse. You do a leave-in conditioner first.
Yes.
Okay. So you do what leave-in do you use?
Any conditioner for me is leave-in. Okay. I just tend to leave it in. I'll do the laundry. I'll take like a few hours and just leave it in. Then I'll wash it out.
Then you rinse it out and then you do the curl sealer.
Yeah.
Okay. And then do you air dry?
I'll air dry. What I tend to do is I do finger curls too.
Okay.
So I'll take my, that's when it really all came together for me. So I'll like rake through it.
Okay.
You know, with the product one section at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I like to put a serum on it first. Then like maybe leave a little conditioner and then I'll put the the final product.
Okay.
Rake through it, get all the curls saturated, and then I take each curl and I
finger coil it.
Yeah, you see these? These are very finger coiled. This is not natural. This is from
Oh wow. Yeah,
finger setting. And then I just let it dry, or I'll use a blow dryer with
a diffuser
on
okay.
it.
Okay. And what do you do at night?
I put it in a pineapple.
Okay.
Like this. And I sleep like this
cute.
With a satin scarf or a satin pillowcase.
Satin
and I'll just put like some pins in it or a pencil, whatever, to just keep it up because this stretches it out in the back.
Right, right.
And it keeps it long on the bottom because if not, it just goes like this.
It gets all like matted. Do you keep a satin pillowcase at your boyfriend's house?
I need to do that.
Yeah, you need to do that. So you're always prepared.
You know what happens is whenever you're in the beginning of a relationship, you try to be
cute. You want to look cute, I know. But that's why you do a satin pillowcase so you don't have to worry about having your satin scarf.
Exactly. I just need to order one already. So thank you for reminding me. I'm just going to get on
Your birthday's coming up. I can like...
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to be like, I want the highest Egyptian satin.
Exactly.
5 million thread count.
Exactly. Why don't you talk to me about like the beauty products or even beauty trends that like you're really loving at the moment? Like what beauty products do you absolutely love, can't live without?
Like specific brands or just a thing?
It could even just be just a thing.
Well, I really do like Milan and I really do like Wet n Wild because I don't like to spend a lot of money on my
products. Oh, so you're like a drugstore diva.
I am a drugstore diva. And there's one product that I splurge on, which is the Bobbi Brown Bronzer Brick.
Ugh, so good. It's like the different strips of...
Precisely.
Yeah.
And now they've made it mini.
Oh, perfect. So you can take a travel version.
It's so exciting.
Oh my gosh. You actually look like a Bobbi Brown girl. Like, you know how they always had those books of like Bobbi Brown beauty? Like, you would be a good beauty brand ambassador for them.
Thank you, Brooke. Right? Thank you for plugging that Bobbi Brown. Did
I know.
You hear that?
Listen, yeah. No, because like you've got the freckles and like I see it.
Thank you very much.
The Bobbi Brown Bronzing Brick. Yes.
Yes. I like the Milan H2O proof eyeliner.
Okay.
And the Wet n Wild H2O proof. It's $2.
Yes.
Of course. And because I'm good to lose it. You know?
Yes,
I'm good to leave it somewhere. You leave a trail of eyeliner.
So you just don't want to spend too much. That makes sense.
Exactly. So I love that one. It doesn't come off at all, the H2O one. So I tend to use that one. I really like to give a wingtip. I'm really minimal, so I'll just put a little concealer under my eye, wingtip, a lot of mascara.
What mascara do you use?
I really liked for a long time that Maybelline, that green tube
one. Yeah, that's the iconic, yeah.
Yeah, I love that one when it came out with like the first gel applicator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now I found my way of applying it myself, so I'm kind of nonspecific.
Okay.
As long, I don't like H2O proof mascara?
Yeah.
Because they tend to like not come off.
It's hard to take it off. Yeah.
It's too annoying.
It took me a second for my brain to understand. You were the first person I've ever heard say H2O proof or waterproof. But I love it. I love that. Okay. H2O proof.
Well, you know, they put it on
I know. I'm like H2O proof. Okay. Yeah. Waterproof. Got it. Yeah.
Very visual thinker. Well, so I'm seeing H2O.
Yeah. One of the things that I started doing instead of buying eye makeup remover pads is I just use oil to take off my eye makeup. Me too. And that like helps a lot.
I tend to do oil cleansing.
Oh, I love oil cleansing. Yeah. Okay. So what do you do? Do you do like a castor oil? And Okay.
I'll have the castor oil be my base. And then I put a bunch of different essential oils. I like to try different things.
Yeah.
I really have fun making my own products.
Oh my gosh, me too. Really? That's like my number one thing. Yeah. I love making products.
I do too. We have a huge aloe vera plant in our yard. We live Amazing. In Laurel Canyon. And I'll just cut like these huge aloe vera stems and I'll put it in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cut it into little strips and put it under my eyes and it sticks. It doesn't move.
Amazing.
So I'm very much so into natural products when it comes to skincare. I do a lot of face steaming.
That's amazing.
Oil cleansing, face steaming. And then I use I'm horrible with the pronunciation of this, but it's like Wolada.
It's a brand name or something?
Yeah, it's a French brand and they have it.
Oh, Walita. Walita. Yeah.
So I love their primrose,
Evening primrose oil. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice.
And they have a moisturizer for nighttime that I really like.
Yes.
And an iris one. So yes. I like really natural leaning things.
Mm-hmm.
What is that girl, Fran, on Instagram?
Yeah, Hey Fran Hey. Yeah.
Hey Fran Hey. I watch a lot of her stuff. Oil cleansing. My go-to like day thing is like I need to get out the house in 25 minutes.
Okay, so you're like low maintenance.
Yeah, as low as we can go. I used to be like contour, but then I realized my freckles were cooler than contour.
Oh my gosh, yeah, your freckles are gorgeous. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah,
so I really like the bronzer brick because it lets you do different things on your face, like a little more brown, a little more pink, a little more just highlighter.
Yeah, no, it's a great
product. It's pretty much concealer, mascara, the Milan eyebrow.
Yeah, I was going to say, your eyebrows are really nice. Do you like get them tweezed,
I haven't
waxed?
Gotten my eyebrows done in over...
So they're just naturally perfectly arched?
I also haven't gotten... I don't think I've gotten them in almost a year. I haven't gotten them done.
So how do they stay so nice? I'm like looking at you so quizzically, like how does this happen?
What I do is I wanted to grow them out.
Yeah.
So what I learned was that a great way to grow them out is to put the black castor oil on them when you go to sleep with a toothbrush.
Oh, wow.
To really stimulate the root.
Yeah.
And then I take a little shaver, a single shaver.
Yes, I have those too.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll do that. And then keeps it growing.
Oh, amazing.
Because so I had thin eyebrows when I was living in New York, because I was getting them threaded all the time.
I know. People really need to like do that less because it really does ruin your brows.
If you don't have the right person too, because I was going to Paris, I was getting threaded, I was in New York, threaded.
You just go at whoever's open.
Exactly. I just had a pet peeve with having any stray hairs, but then I realized that I was starting to look like a 60-year-old woman with like these thin eyebrows.
You could never look like a 60-year-old woman.
No, I was looking very 90s.
Yeah.
You know?
But like not good 90s.
No, not the best of it. So I like not getting them done. I was very inspired by Solange on that one.
Oh my God, yeah. She has, their whole family has the most amazing brows. I can't wait to see the twins to see if like they've got the Jay-Z and Beyonce. Gosh.
They're like America's twins.
I know. They're like, I feel like Jay-Z and Beyonce are like our like Prince William and Kate, right? Like they're right? I mean, in terms of like a couple that everyone just like idolizes and dies for, it's them.
I've never thought of that as a comparison, but it's perfect.
Yeah, it's totally true.
It's really perfect.
And I said Jay-Z and Beyonce's eyebrows, but it really is Miss Tina's DNA. Like
Miss Tina,
her DNA just has, it's strong.
I've met her a few times and every time I'm so nervous. I don't know why. Literally, I'm tripping. You know, her husband has coached me a bit in acting.
Oh, right. Her husband's an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to go to their place once, and he was going to, I had this big audition. He was training me. And I pull into the driveway, and for some reason, my car just starts going back. So I put my foot on the accelerator and just makes this huge screeching noise. And I come up, and he's like, did you run over the mailbox?
That's so funny.
I was so embarrassed. Oh my God. Of course, I see you, Miss Teen. I'm dropping my bag.
Oh my God.
She's just such royalty.
I know.
In her presence.
I'm saying she's like the queen.
She's the queen. And she's so cool and down to earth.
I know.
I love her.
Yeah, she's great. Now, are there any beauty trends that you really don't like? I mean, I saw one of my least favorite trends up on the beautiful pool here where we're staying in LA.
Oh, goodness.
The Kim Kardashian clone, like,
look.
It's just like, I don't know, have your own thing. It really bothers me when I see so many people emulating an identical look from someone else. Are there any beauty trends that you see and just, like, makes you cringe?
Well, I have to agree that on a larger scale of things, just, like, authenticity is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really wanted to start the Culture Crew and produce content and events that would really highlight things that make our cultures unique and that make us as humanity unique from anything else.
Right.
And I find that as the world quickly is globalizing, that beauty, the ideals of beauty are as well. And that's fine in all things, but it is a little bit troubling when I find that a lot of people look the same.
Right.
Now.
A lot of people look the same. It's weird.
You know, amendments done to their faces and their bodies to look the same. I find that anything that's going to make you feel as beautiful as you are inside, I support that totally.
Mm-hmm.
But I find also that the differences in us challenge us to find ourselves, that journey of, you know, I don't love everything about my face. I don't love everything about my body. I don't love everything about my hair. But as I embrace it and I say, okay, like just how I broke my foot, I'm going to rock the broken foot like an accessory.
Yes.
I'm going to embrace the things I don't like and make my weaknesses a strength. And I think that's a trend that I want to see more than what our perceived weaknesses, just make them like everyone else.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Are there any like specific trends or even like a product that you tried and you hated?
I don't like this like thing, how they're like putting this thing over their lips and they're plumping them. I don't know if you've seen that.
Wait, like lip injections?
No, it's this thing. It's like a big thing that they put over their mouth and they push it.
Oh my God.
Almost like a penis pump, but it's over their lips and they're pumping their lips.
Okay.
I don't understand. You get it? It's okay. We have thin lips. We have thick lips. I have in between.
I wouldn't say your lips are in between. Your lips are like full.
They are. So
do you think that as like a performer, someone who is like your own brand, how much do you think of that is the way that you look and present yourself, and how much of it is like pure talent?
In my estimation or in the world's estimation?
Both. I want to hear your opinion on both.
I think in my opinion, it's equal.
Okay.
It's equally as important.
Okay. And what do you think the world thinks? That they probably, their image is more important.
80% looks, 20% talent, maybe?
I know.
Yeah.
And do you know why I think people think that? Because you have people that are so famous and they really don't have any talent, right? So like someone like a Kylie Jenner, and no shade to them, they're like very successful in their own right, but it's only image. In like zero talent. So I feel like because people see that and observe that, they think that just like a look alone is going to get you far. But talent is very
important. Yeah.
Very important. Yeah.
Well, what I found also is that I was having a meeting with someone and he told me that he was with a publicist who's with someone who's very big.
Okay.
And this publicist said, talent is not important. It's all about the story, it's all about the angle, it's all about the brand and the look. And that is how a lot of the people who are in positions of power,
they
believe that.
Mm.
So they're not putting what is perceived. I mean, and when we say talent, creative talent, the arts, dancing, you know, having a passion and working towards it in a study.
Right.
Now, I do think that the definition of talent has changed because I do. For Kylie Jenner, for example, she does have a talent of publicizing herself, marketing herself.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of musicians that I went to school with even
don't know how to do that. Yes. Right.
So that's not enough. Like they could be so talented. Right. They could be much better musicians than me or some of the musicians who have won Grammys. But the thing is that that's not going to get you to those positions of power that the world sees you.
True.
It's a little bit of all of it.
You kind of need to know how to do both.
So I do respect people who are able to put, it's a talent
yeah.
to get famous off of pretty much your looks, or not a lot. I have respect for that business ethic because maybe I don't always have it, so I started to learn from it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I think that now in the 21st century, we're not in a period of A&R. We're not in a period of getting discovered. We're very much so in a period of making yourself and creating a team to make yourself.
Interesting.
So when you have that triad of like publicity, talent, business sense.
Yes.
That's when you win.
Right.
And a look for, that's when you win. So I think it's a bit of everything.
Yeah. So, like, for you, on your Instagram account, like, when you post something, are you thinking, like, this is, you know, for my personal brand, or are you just, like, this is a self-expression, a tool for self-expression?
I've had a real battle with social media.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about your battle with social media.
Well, because I've really been on the scene in New Orleans, watching people and making a name for myself in that way. And, I just found that
you can't. That's your man.
Yeah, that's my boo. Sorry, y'all.
Okay, I'll pause for a second.
Hey, boo. Yeah, I was a film student at Columbia and even at Berkeley a bit. And one of the things that we studied is the changes in technology and how that affected the creative industries. So, for example, when like the silent film industry was happening, and then talkies happened, there was mass. Suicide, actually.
Right, because a lot of the people that had gotten work in talkies weren't right for... Sorry, in silent films weren't right for talkies, right?
Precisely. So there were a lot of musicians, because they would have live musicians who would tour with it. They had mass suicide. A lot of the actors didn't know how to deal with it. And it was this non-acceptance of this technology that everyone looked at like it was a joke. When film first happened, it was a joke to a lot of people.
Right.
When recorded music first happened, it was a joke to a lot of people. Right. And for me, I made the mistake that when Twitter and Instagram happened,
I was like,
this is a fucking joke. So you're going to just sit here and be like, today I clipped my fingernail.
Right.
I came from an older school of just, you know, Donny Hathaway's and Bonnie Raitt's and Muddy Waters and people who were just on the road.
Right.
But now I'm realizing the marriage that it has.
Yes.
So I'm really excited to really start to take advantage of social media. And nobody really knows what I'm capable of doing because I haven't posted it.
Right. Yeah. You post like very infrequently. Like,
yeah.
You give us a little taste, you know, now and again, like at a premiere or something. Like, ooh.
Well, just get ready.
Okay. I'm ready.
It's going down in the next few weeks. We're really going to start to get consistent and take advantage of that free publicity to just share. To share what we do.
Yeah, you know? No, totally. And you should share it, you know, because like you have all of these gifts and talents and you could perform to a room of 20 people. But when you, I mean, I'm sure you have tons of followers, but once you share it to like the thousands of people online, it's like a whole new audience that gets to see you.
Exactly. And I think that I was definitely running away from that because I'm not a vain person in that way. Let me take a selfie. You know, I don't look at people who do that, like they are vain per se. I just personally,
it's not your thing.
I don't always know how to take a moment to document stuff in the moment, you know?
Right.
So it's really cool to, as my company expands a bit and we get more help, to have people on the team who can document it more like old school rock and roll. Where there were epic photographers documenting, you know, the Bob Dylans and the Beatles of the world. In the process of doing what they do.
Right. Do you know who does an amazing job of that? Leon Bridges.
Leon's a friend of mine as well.
I think he's so amazing. I went like out of my way to say to his photographer who like travels on the road.
Rambo?
Yes, like you do such an amazing job of creating an aesthetic that matches his music and like it's just all I feel like he's an amazing example of like how an artist can use social media for their own image.
I got to learn a lot from hanging out with them.
Yeah.
He's actually, his family's from New Orleans.
Oh, right. That's right. I met his mom at the Grammys. She was so nice.
Yeah, she's really nice. It's Sawyer, that song is about her.
Yeah, because he was like living with her and
he said
he does everything for her, which is like so cute.
Yeah, that she's really sweet. We went to the New Orleans debut concert, which was so exciting. His whole family was there. He actually asked me to come sing backgrounds on his tour.
Oh my God.
A while ago. But he also then said, you know, that from what I see, you have your own thing kind of going.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take you off that. Of course, that was hard for me because I was like, what you mean you don't want me to go to Australia? But at the same time, it was true. It was a blessing that he told me that because I had to keep feeding into this thing. But yeah, finding that ode to the greats.
Yes.
But then also updating it, mm-hmm. which is really cool. And when I'll send you a picture of the two of us. We went out to dinner in New Orleans, and he was just dressed to the nines.
Oh, my God. His talk about personal style. Yes, he's got it.
And just stepping out with Leon, I just realized how great you feel about yourself.
Yes, yes.
When you're just being authentic, not wearing, okay, yeah, I'm wearing high waters, and everybody else has their ass out in baggy jeans, but right. I don't care.
Right, because this is me, and this is who I am.
And I feel good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He looked like a soldier going off to war in 1940. He like showed up at my house. He and Luke James.
Oh, Luke James, yeah.
Showed up to my house.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what are you guys
doing? It's a nice store to open.
Yeah, right? I was like, wow, beautiful yeah. chocolate men.
Yes.
And I took them to Verrett's, which is no longer a music venue in New Orleans, but it's still a bar there. And we had this great thing, Cool Nasty, Elliot, Stefan, and my friends. They hosted this great jam session. Oh, cool. And it was me, Luke, and Leon That's just passing dope. The
Someone
mic.
There filming it?
Yeah, we actually have some footage of it.
Okay, you have to send that to me.
Yeah, That's yeah. Amazing. Luke posted some stuff a while back, but it was so cool just seeing two like black men who are so confident in who yes. their self-image
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know,
and their voices.
Yeah, and the talents there too.
Yeah, but Rambo's really cool. She's someone you should interview too.
Yeah.
I could get you in touch with her.
Okay, I will definitely reach out.
She sent my mom a hat.
Oh my God, so cute.
But yeah, he did a great job of gearing his social media to his personal taste.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is my last question for you.
Okay.
It's a question I ask everyone, every single one of my guests.
Okay. Well, I hope I wasn't too loquacious.
No, oh my gosh, you're amazing.
I'm good.
When do you feel the most beautiful?
When I'm on stage.
Mm. You're just in your element.
Because I'm doing God's work.
Wow.
And I know that I'm where I need to be.
Wow.
So when I am performing and I'm tapping into the spirit that he put into me, because I realize that when I sing for God,
mm-hmm.
that's when I do my best work.
Mm-hmm.
I was a philosophy student, so they asked a lot of, why are you doing this? I was yes. like, why am I doing this? And when I'm on stage, I feel most connected to the higher power and to the people. So I feel really yeah. beautiful.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's a beautiful answer. Well, thank you so much for coming and doing the show. And it was so good catching up with you. And
thank you.
You'll have to like send me links to everything so I can put everything in the show notes so everyone can like listen to your music and just like
sure.
experience how amazing you are.
We're going to have a project soon. Yay.
Yes, yes. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you come out with next now that you're doing like the content and the culture mm-hmm. stuff. It's going to be like big things ahead.
I'm really excited to share with people what we've been working on. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
But we haven't shared it. So that's the beginning. We'll see how it goes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brooke. Beautiful woman.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.